Off the ball. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Friday Night Racing this Friday afternoon. It's Friday Night Racing on the radio and Off the Ball on News Talk. It's obviously Friday Night Racing every Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Across all of our social channels, the best place to watch us is offtheball.com. Of course, you can listen to us on the Go Loud app. Our special guest this week is Richard Pugh. Richard, you're very welcome. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be
also
here.
With us is John Duggan because Johnny Ward is in Tbilisi.
That's perfectly fine. I was there 16 years ago. It's a great place. But I can just smell and feel the jump season around the corner now. I'm beginning to feel.
It's coming, isn't it?
It is coming.
Yeah, it feels that way.
It started for us last weekend, so we're off and running. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So what is point to point?
What is point to point? Yeah, there's a starter for 10. I often think the best way to describe what point to pointing is to describe where it came from and how it's split into steeplechasing and point to pointing.
Okay, yeah.
This won't take too long, but back in 1752, there was two gentlemen who decided to have a race back in 1752, and they decided to race from a start point, which was the steeple on the church in Buttevant, and the end point was the steeple on the church in Donerail.
In Cork?
In Cork.
Right.
So point to point steeplechasing was formed there and then, if you like. No one's recorded the winner, but we know it began there. Steeplechasing has gone on into the Irish Grand National, the Gold Cups and all those races, but point to pointing has remained and being retained. It's run by the Hunt Clubs of Ireland, generally as fundraisers, but very much under the rules and regulations of the Turf Club, now IHRB.
So go back there, because the history is kind of fascinating. That race was the first steeplechase.
Yes.
But it's also a point to point, because they're racing from one point to another.
Absolutely.
When do they become...
Throughout the 1800s, it started to split, and towards the late 1800s then, point to pointing formed its own life, if you like, and it was run by the Hunt Clubs, and racing became more strictly formed, if you like, into what we know today and regulated by the Turf Club.
And strictly formed means you would go to the same track three or four times a year, or however often a meeting was held, whereas point to point could happen anywhere.
I suppose one way of describing it is pop-up racing. I mean, if you go to Leopardstown or the Curragh or wherever you might go, the infrastructure is there. Loughrea next Sunday, there would have been no infrastructure there last Monday. They literally have to roll in the fences, bring in a marquee so that the riders can get changed, and the bales so that they can go around the course correctly. So it's a pop-up race meeting.
Like a circus?
Like a circus.
But a good circus.
Very good circus, yeah.
But would it be the same meeting though every single weekend of like in next year's weekend at this time of year, will it be same? Will it also be Loughrea, or do you get me, or does it vary?
Our season started last weekend and it'll run till June. We've about 100 fixtures in a season, and they run every weekend, right through bar one weekend of Christmas we stop. An odd Saturday up the north, about 20 Saturdays up the north, and I think it's something like 33 straight Sundays, there'd be less than 5 meetings that aren't on a weekend. And they're at, as I say, 100 fixtures. They'd be on 70 different courses, of which almost all of those are the pop-up circuses as you describe.
Are they repeated though every year? Is it like the same at the same time of year, like you have the way you have in under rules, you've got the Stowell Racing Festival, you've got Leopardstown at Christmas, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a very similar fixture list every year. You do get changes in it,
okay.
but much the same as you would on the race course.
I was looking through the list of where the fixtures are on, and it is like it's like a 1960s poem. Toombridge, Castletown, Gagan, Loughrea, Portrush, Knockinroe, Doth Hall, Lochmore, The Pigeons, Tinahealy, Drumahan, Lisrona. And it's not, like, I can see exactly why people consider this to be grassroots, because it's off the beaten track.
It connects with every corner of Ireland. Like, this is a rural pursuit through and through. I was in Toombridge last Saturday, and you're down to Castletown, Gagan and Westmeath then on Sunday, and we'll go all around the country, north, south, east and west, and it connects everywhere. And racing can be a little bit in the west in during the summer and a little bit more towards the east in the winter, but this has a wonderful spread to it, and it keeps many racing people connected with real racing that don't want to travel, we'll say.
So who goes to it?
In a perfect world, it engages with the locals. You know, in a perfect world, it would draw out the locals to the point to point annually, and in many, many instances it does that. Some particularly well that have great history. You look at the Knockinards and the Drumahans and the meetings that have been going for years, and the locals turn up year on year. It'll also obviously bring, I think the circus analogy isn't a bad one, it brings the players with it, the riders, the trainers, the people who look after the horses, the officials, they all come along and sort of make the show happen, if you like. And it would take it, it takes sort of 60 to 80 volunteers to run a point-to-point meeting on the day, from people parking cars to stewarding to clerk of the scales, right through to starter and people manning each of the fences.
So it's as you say, pop-up racing. Who are those volunteers in each instance? Are they different, is the owner of the local point-to-point always a hunt, or what group has responsibility? Yeah.
The Hunt Club will run the meeting. So next Sunday, it's the Galway Blazers. They're running the meeting on the land in Loughrea. And it's their task, I suppose, to ensure that they have the required number of people to carry out every role. In any way, in any event management that you set out to achieve, you need somebody in each area, on each fence. You need your fence stewards, you need your people stewarding, etc. And it's their job, the Galway Blazers, on Sunday, to make sure they have everything in place.
And so how do the races work? Is it generally a fixed number of races on each card, or each card's fairly similar?
Gets a little bit simpler from here compared to the track. There are always six races.
Right.
And they are almost, with very few exceptions, they're all over 3 mile and almost all over 15 fences. There are variances, but not too many. So we're simple at the outset.
And how do you split the field then? How do I know which of the six races is my race?
You split them by age and by what they've achieved. So you have maiden races, obviously, for horses that have never won. Four-year-old maiden being the one that we'll surely get onto this, where the saleable horses are, because they're breaking through into the national hunt world. Five-year-old, six-year-old, seven-year-old and older maidens for horses that have achieved less, obviously. You have winners races of one or two. If you've won one or two point-to-points, you're running them.
Okay.
And the open lightweight division has become interesting because you see horses coming back from the track to run in those. And point-to-pointing fulfills a number of roles within the industry. One is for the sort of, it's a school for young horses, an academy almost for young horses coming through, and we'll touch on that in a moment. But it's also almost fills the role of veteran chases. Ed Wolfe, for instance, has entered in Loughrea on Sunday. It's not that long ago he won the Irish Gold Cup with Derek O'Connor. So we don't have the same veteran chase structure in Ireland as they do in England, but they can come back through this route and compete.
And are they coming back to compete, to get fit, to go back to the track, or are they coming back because this is the end of the career and they're not ready to retire?
Yes and yes, and it might even be dipping the toe in the water. If he were to go out and be impressive, I shouldn't answer for him, but if he were to go out and be impressive,
just as an example,
perhaps we'd see him back for another Irish Gold Cup. If he wasn't impressive, maybe he'd stay at that sphere. It does serve a great role on a Sunday, because when a horse that's well known, if someone like yourselves went to a point-to-point, none of us know the four-year-olds when they turn up on a field. I was fortunate enough to see Best Mate and Imperial Commander win their point-to-points, but it wasn't until years later that became relevant. I didn't know leaving the field what I'd seen that day.
Would you not know, though, say for Best Mate, Imperial Commander, Denman, Champagne Fever, that these horses, there's something special about them?
To be honest, yes and no. I mean, Imperial Commander looked like a monster the day he won. He was just incredible.
But as a
four-year-old,
right.
Yeah. He was just so, so good. Kevin Ross produced him at Summerhill point-to-point, the Nathan Towers. But I've seen many monsters, and like kids playing football, it's a triangle and some of them get to the top of it, you know. Best Mate, I was there, he won a two-runner race. He beat a mare of Michael Horrigan 6 or 8 lengths. I was very, very early in my career of reporting for the Irish Field and commentary, and the late Tom Costello pulled me one side afterwards. "Are you writing for the Irish Field?" I said, "I am." And he said, "This is the best four-year-old we've ever had." And I thought, he's not going to pull the wool over my eyes that quickly.
Did you back it for the Gold Cup when it turned up in Cheltenham then a few years later?
No. Well, in fairness, at that stage, he was a well-known story. But no, he didn't. He won a two-runner race.
So how can you tell? You don't know what the quality of the second horse is, really. And
I think it's like watching kids playing football at the age of 8, 10 or 12. You just see a kid that can do something that little bit different, or playing tennis or playing golf. When you see a horse that just, they jump, with Imperial Commander, for instance, it looked like the rest, he was just in slow motion against the others.
Right.
But as I say, other horses have done it and they haven't progressed. And that's the beauty of jump racing. It's not known.
Because they're all over a fairly similar distance, is it possible then, is it easy enough for the good talent spotters to be at a point-to-point and go, you know, I've seen all the other point-to-points this year. I have a fair idea that one is standing out. Like, is that because it's not like I'm trying to do, is this a 2 mile, is this a hurdler, is this, you know, is this a staying horse, is this a sprinter? It's actually fairly easy to go, okay, well, I've seen all the first and second time winners out against each other for the whole season. This guy's really good. I can tell that now because
it's probably gone to a level beyond that now. I mean, the agents, because of the success that's coming out of point-to-pointing, at one stage I think it was 9 of the last 14 Cheltenham Gold Cups had come from point-to-points. And I think that the stat that probably catches most people is that 32% of every runner at the Cheltenham Festival once came from Irish Point to Point. So it's a huge feeding ground for the elite of racing, if you like. So the agents now, they'd be going around to the yards at this time of year to see what's in each yard, what's standing out. They would have seen those horses at the store sales, and they'd be watching them make their way through, so that by the time that horse wins, he's almost confirming the potential that he had been showing. And of course, that creates its own demand, and they're making good prices at the sales.
But so just explain that process to us, will you? When are the store sales? What age are the horses at that
stage? Horses are bought aged 3, May, June, July, August, and they're then broken by guys who have basically emerged as professional pinhookers, you'll call them. They'll buy them aged 3, they'll break them throughout the summer, and produce them to run from February of their 4-year-old year.
Okay, so they're horses that everybody knew from the start was going to be a National Hunt horse, because obviously, correct, if it's a flat horse, you're breaking it into two.
Yeah.
And sometimes we see flat horses ending up on the National Hunt, but that they would have been broken at 2 anyway, and then not quite made the grade or looked better. Correct. Okay. That begins to make sense. So
that's probably a key point as to how we've got to where we are today, because we've seen point-to-pointing emerge as this, you know, you'll read a lot of big figures about what horses are making, there's a huge demand for them. And ultimately, well, what happened, two things happened. 2001, foot and mouth happened. And foot and mouth created this industry by providing us with what we call the autumn season. Point-to-pointing used to run from January to May. And in 2001, we lost most of the January to May season. So to compensate the hunt clubs, they decided to run an autumn season in October, November and December,
right,
to catch up the meetings that they missed. So that was fine. We had the 01-02 season, we'll call it, for the first time ever. And then we kept it going.
Right.
But what emerged from that is that the season was now long enough for people to structure an entire business around. So previous to that, you would have had Tom Costello and Padge Burry selling horses alongside other streams of income, if you like. But nowadays, if we look at the age profile of the guys who are selling, Colin Bowe and Donica Doyle and Dennis Murphy, they're all sort of in their 40s, because previous to 2001, they couldn't have done this. But now the season is longer. It's October to June. And that happened in 2001. Now they've enough time to structure an entire business around it. At the very same time, the internet is emerging. And two things. The Englishman can look in at what's happening point of pointing. But second to that, the world can look in at flat racing. And flat racing started to divert, flat horses started to divert all over the world. So flat horses used to come in their droves to National Hunt Racing, Istabrak and the likes. I'm not sure we'll ever see an Istabrak again. He'll head off somewhere around the world and he'll race in Medan or Hong Kong or something like that. So now the demand and supply, so the supply of flat horses was crippled going into jump racing as point of pointing was emerging. And whilst the results are good and all the rest of it, we just filled that gap. So it's there's a logic to it, if you like.
Okay, that's a brilliant history lesson. Can you go back to the Istabrak thing? So so Istabrak was obviously bred to be a flat horse, is that right?
Correct, yeah.
And ends up on the as a National Hunt horse because he's not fast enough to be a... Is that,
he kind of came from the flat scene, and he was a good handicapper, I think, on the flat, a very good handicapper, if I remember. But he just took very naturally to hurdling, very naturally to hurdling. And I think it was John Dirk had spotted him and brought him into, and, yeah, and he passed away. John,
why would you do that though? What's the business rationale behind taking a horse from the flat to National Hunt?
I think the rationale was just to win at the Cheltenham Festival, to train and own a champion, like a champion hurdler. Like Ireland at the time didn't have many champion hurdle winning horses, and he won 3 in a row. So it was okay. We spotted this horse had a talent for doing something, and it wasn't necessarily breeding. It was to be a brilliant National Hunt horse, which he became.
So that's just intuition.
A lot of horses tried. Istabrak was the exception. So many horses would have been making the
Fly. I think was 5th in the Derby and did nothing at Cheltenham. Like that. What's that Dermot Weld horse that won the Ascot Gold Cup? Was it Rite of Passage?
Yes.
Dermot Weld had a horse that won the Ascot Gold Cup, but he couldn't win at Cheltenham. Just the way it is sometimes.
Yeah. And I suppose the advantage of a point to point is, you know, they have a mental want to jump. They're prepared to jump. They're you know, they've proven themselves over jumps. But notwithstanding any of that, the relevant factor here is that there was a number of flat horses coming to the end of their time, aged 3, 4, 5, that naturally made their way into jumps.
Okay.
And now the demand worldwide was stripping them away from us, and the additional opportunities in England and Chelmsford and Wolverhampton and Ireland and Dundalk.
So you can find a place for that horse.
Correct.
So the older horse, the 5-year-olds.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And the National
Hunt
owner then needed to divert, and at the very same time, point of pointing is emerging and producing results. We had Best Mate as our poster boy at this very time, winning 3 Gold Cups. So you know, it it was the perfect storm.
So that brings an injection of capital from people who are interested to who see if I invest here, I might be able to get something out.
Maybe yes.
And I'm sure. Is this actually because a lot of people say, you know, you don't get into owning a horse to make money, but you might get into breeding horses to make money. I'm sure that everybody gets into breeding horses to make money. And so
the guys buying these store horses aged three. To run them at four and sell them at five, they're buying to make money. Their whole business survives upon the ability to make money.
And the only place that you can realistically run them, I mean, you can probably run them on the track, but that's risky and expensive. Whereas
that's another key point. The advantage of running at a point-to-point, there are a number of advantages. One is you prove that the horse can jump and has a resolve and want to jump and can prove themselves. But secondly, you're selling on a blank canvas. Now, what I mean by that is if you run in a bumper and win the bumper, and I sell them to you, that's one less thing you can do. The bumper is now won. But if you run in a point-to-point and win equally as impressively, the next person, the end user, if you like, can still run in a bumper or a hurdle or a chase.
And then sell again.
Correct. So you're proving, or not necessarily, they can keep them, but if you want to, you can prove the horse's ability, but sell a blank canvas to the English owner who decide, or Irish owner, who can decide where they want to run the horse. But once you've run in a hurdle and won a hurdle, you've locked out the next man's ability to run the bumper or a hurdle. So it's proving ability without using up any of the bullets, I suppose.
Will Michael O'Leary's scaling down of his Irish operation with Giggins Henhouse Stud hurt the point-to-point industry?
Indirectly. He used to run a number of horses in point-to-points, so whatever entries he would have had, he obviously won't have them anymore. I think the biggest plus of Michael O'Leary being in point-to-points was those Giggins Town horses showed. We run for about 600-800 euro worth of prize money in the four-year-old division, and Michael O'Leary would have taken some very, very valuable stores and brought them for their first run to a point-to-point. Now, you don't do that for 600 euro. Michael O'Leary knows the price of a euro. So you're doing that because you believe it is the best starting point for a high-class young National Hunt horse, because you believe if you do this, you'll put him on a good footing for his future or her future. So that's why he did it. So it gave it great credibility that we weren't just a crowd of reckless Irishmen running around the field to try and see what the best horse was. That people like him, and J.P. McManus has done it as well, Graham Wiley has done it, but Michael O'Leary did it on a bigger scale. And it gave huge credibility to the sport that this is a perfect starting ground for a National Hunt horse to start off.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I understand, there's no real downside. If your horse doesn't win the point-to-point, it can still go on to be a great horse.
Absolutely, yeah. We've many examples. For War of Attrition fell at the last and went on to win a Gold Cup. Cool Dawn was probably the one that really got away. I think he was a 5 or 6 year old maiden when he finally, after 6 or 7 runs, made his way over to England and won the Cheltenham Gold Cup. But I have to say, nowadays, That's gone. The ability to produce horses. There are very, very few of the best horses that haven't gone on. And like you look at the moment, the poster boy would be Envoy Alain, a big 17-hand four-year-old. But he still turned out the first Sunday in February and won. And if you go back, Best Mate won and Imperial Commander won.
Champagne Fever won twice at Cheltenham. I remember they were raving about him.
Three times, John. We all know he won. No, twice, but Western Warhorse. We're still not believing that
photo finish. I remember I get this book every autumn, like a kind of a jumpers to follow book, and there's a point-to-point section in it. And there's raving about Champagne Fever. And then he got beaten in February, I think, on the track.
That's right.
Then he turns up the Cheltenham bumper, wins a 16-1. Yeah. It was absolutely sick. But if you go to a point-to-point, like I've never been, bizarrely.
John.
I know. I'm ashamed of myself. Like, is there catering? Is there like a grandstand? Is there bookies? Presumably, I know it can be maybe looks a bit more rough and ready, but presumably from a medical point of view, there's like an ambulance and there's like the watering is safe and all that kind of thing. What's the experience like?
The experience is grassroots, and you're far more in touch with the sport than you will be at any race meeting. You have everything you described, but in the pop-up environment. So you will have catering. Sometimes the Hunt Club will provide it themselves. They'll make the tea and sandwiches in front of you. On other occasions, they'll have a chip van in there. On other occasions, they'll go further than that. We've our own website, p2p.ie, but on gop2p.ie, we explain what the amenities are at each point-to-point. Will there be bouncy castles? Will there be any other activities for kids, etc.? Just to give you a feel before you go, what are you likely to get on any given Sunday? But the one thing you're guaranteed is the close-up access.
Yeah.
That's the thing that gets... I mean,
it's almost like going to a golf tournament and there's no ropes.
Exactly that. It's exactly that.
There are ropes, though. You won't be able to run out in front of the horses. Don't worry about it.
You could if you tried. I mean, I have two kids, age 5 and 3, and I mean, for them to go to a point to point is huge, because you can go down to the lorry and watch the horse that you followed being saddled.
Yeah.
You can walk up to the parade ring, you put your hand out and touch them. And if you go down to the last fence, there's no place like the last fence in a horse race. There's plenty of good sports, but when 19 horses go down over a fence, it's one of the most powerful sights in horse racing. And in a point to point, you can go down and see it and watch it. And a horse of the quality of Ed Wolf next Sunday, we've had so many high class horses came back point to pointing, Sir Deschamps, First Lieutenant. It's a great experience.
And how big are the fields?
Maximum 19.
Right, so as big as that?
Yeah. And I suppose one of the key advantages we have, it's not as big a point now, but it was during the Celtic Tiger, is if we have more than 19, on the day, we divide the race into two tents for safety reasons.
Okay.
So you're guaranteed if you turn up, you will run.
Right.
There's no doubt that
so there might be a seventh race in the card, which is 10.
There could be, yeah, but we won't confuse it too much.
Right, a reminder here, sponsors Devonish are hosting the Doth Point to Point and Country Fair on Sunday, October the 27th. And we have a competition here to win a family pass, including overnight accommodation and €200 spending money. So answer this question. How many times has the Doth Point to Point been held? Is it in its first year, third year or fifth year? Text your name and your answer to 53106 for 30 cents and we'll get back to you after the show. I'm reliably informed Doth is one of the fancy ones.
Will we see you there, John?
Hopefully. I'm fascinated to know now, Richard Pugh on Friday Night Racing, who the next Envoy Allen is, who the horses are for our notebook for the new season.
Yeah, so we see in Doubt then. we could see him in Doubt, who knows?
We don't. There's nobody like even that's kind of from last year that's coming through to this National Hunt season that we need to look out for.
Ah, look, there are plenty. There was a horse won in Lingstown last.
It has a whiskey bar. JP's telling me there's a champagne from a horse trailer. There's all sorts of nice food. This does sound pretty high end. This is the one to go to, JD.
To be fair, if anyone's listening and they haven't gone to a point to point before, it's only 30, 40 minutes north of Dublin. Just you'll see. You can almost see the
track. Is it Doubt?
Doubt, yeah.
I was rhyming with Doubt.
But aside from obviously having the point to point, which is enough reason to go on its own right, there's huge activities with the day. They'll capture the fact that it's tripping on top of Halloween, obviously. The number of activities for kids, there's an artisan food fair. There'll be nobody goes and doesn't have something to do. Your kids will be fully entertained for the day. You'll see close-up horse racing. You could see riders of the calibre of Derek O'Connor and Jamie Codd, who are Cheltenham Festival-winning riders. It's not indicative of every single point to point, but Owen Brennan and Devonish have got behind the Meath and Tara's, and they're running exceptionally well-supported point-to-point, and it's a great day out. And many, many other hunt clubs are doing something similar at the moment. The guys in Clare and Belharbour and Quakerstown, down in Kinsale, it's a very, very well-known point-to-point at the end of the season. And the Northern Campaign, they do a great job up there. But Doubt, 27th of October, it's only a couple of weeks away. It's only up the road. If you ever thought I might go, John, this could be the one.
Do they wear colours?
Of course they wear colours. How would the commentator manage?
Yeah, well, I know you're... Well, I'm sure you'd manage.
They do, and they wear the Jigginstown colours, the JP colours.
Right, okay.
It's exactly the same. The race card, you'll get the same level of information. In some instances, you get more, because if a horse hasn't run before, you get a full breeding note saying what the dam has done and what the half-brothers have done.
Right.
So to give you an idea of what you're seeing, the weight structures are quite clean, and that, you know, they're all carrying in and around 12 stone with a £5 allowance for mares. So it is quite clean and simple to follow in that regard. But it's exactly what you expect to see in a horse race. There's a start, a finish, 15 jumps in the middle, colours, jockeys. Yeah, it's you could overcomplicate it, but it is horse racing.
Do you find that like the likes of Derek O'Connor and Jamie Codd, who've been in this kind of sphere, they're more, would they become more horsemen than jockeys? Does that make any sense?
It's definitely a different discipline. I mean, we've seen many riders not sort of break through. Many riders have broken through point to pointing. Edge McGuire broke through and he was champion and he went on to be a great jockey.
Wow, right.
Norman Williamson came through. Ruby rode in one or two, but he wouldn't say that was his grounding. But he did ride in a couple, and Robert Power, I think, rode in one. So a lot of them have come through. But Norman Williamson and certainly Edge McGuire, Timmy Murphy and Davy Russell, of course, they came through having done a lot of it. But it is a different discipline. So Rachel Blackmore, for instance, it wasn't happening for her. But then when she came to the track, she absolutely took off. But Derek and Jamie are on a talent that we might never see again. I mean, what they've achieved in point-to-pointing, no matter what way you look at it, it's incredible. They rode over 100 winners in a season that only has 800 races. And they couldn't ride in many of them, because if you're at one meeting, you can't ride at the other three. They rode over 26% of all the winners, the two of them.
Wow.
So, I mean, their dominance when they were at peak was incredible. And even last Saturday, the first six races of the season in Tunbridge, and the two lads pick up four of them, and they went head to head at the last, in the last race. It's like the good old days.
It's Friday Night Racing you're listening to here. We're about 20 minutes into it, and our guest is Richard Pugh. Richard, you were talking about the that kind of magical coalescence of factors which led to the sport kind of taking off in Ireland in the early noughties. You set up P2P around that around that time, am I right?
Yeah, it was 2003, and it would have been part of the perfect storm that came together that I didn't see what else was happening around, but we set up P2P, which would give you information on point-to-point, and you can search horses, search riders, search courses, search what's on, etc. And it just allowed people, if they were buying or just getting involved, to take an interest in the sport.
Did you know it was going to be a business at that stage? Like, did you
started as a hobby,
right?
And there was probably a demand for it that allowed it to take off. So I went full time in 2007 as a sort of, we'll give this a go and see how it's going to work out.
That's pretty brave at that stage.
Look, circumstances allowed for it, and it felt like it was going well. Sure, everything was going well just about 2007,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. Did you get through the crash okay?
Just about, yeah. We charge hunts per entry, and we had 18,000 entries a year in the good times, and they dropped to 9,000. So we felt the pinch, yeah, absolutely. But look, you sort of pivot and you try and find different ways to do what you do, and we're out the far side, thankfully.
Yeah, and now you do 16 million jobs within the industry.
More than one.
A man of many hats.
More than one. But look, we're very lucky that we're in an industry that we enjoy. So you can do things that, you know, you might maybe work more than the 39-hour week, but you're always doing something that you enjoy doing. And the combination of factors and point-to-pointing is what makes it easy. You start the day with maybe a 4 and a 5-year-old maiden, with guys who have bought horses with big pressure on to make them perform, run well, go to sales and sell, and hopefully go on and be the next Envoy-Len. Then you get into the older maidens, which is people coming to have fun. We'd like to have more of them. It's the area that needs the most attention at the moment. But people coming to have fun and running a horse that they keep during the week and for that purpose. And then in the middle of the day, you have Ed Wolf or an equivalent turning up to see where is he in his career path. Is he still going to go back to the Gold Cup?
Yeah.
Or is he finished? But can he compete in point of points? So it's the mix of all of that. People having fun, people hoping they can squeeze a bit more out of their, you know, their racehorse, and people hoping that they've got the next superstar. And then you've got a huge voluntary support behind it. So those people, when people do something in a voluntary capacity, they tend to be more enthusiastic about it, they have a lot of passion in it, and you get that, you really feel that. It's the mix of the factors.
How did you get into it?
I got into it through hunting. I used to hunt, my father hunted with, my mother both hunted with the Sligo Harriers and then the Galway Blazers. And when I was 16 and used to help set up the point-to-point track, I realised that hunting was fun, but they went a little bit quicker. So for a brief period I rode, and I managed to retire at the age of 19.
You didn't win her punches down, did you?
I did, yeah, I had a winner. I won the Ladies' Cup at 95. That was a great day. That was as good as it gets, to be honest. You got to touch what it might be like to be a good jockey. It was unbelievable, unbelievable.
What do you remember of the race?
I remember every bit of it.
Do you really? Oh, have you watched it back?
Oh!
Every Christmas?
Yeah, look, of course I have. Sure, it's a very unusual sport that somebody like me who was in college can walk into a weigh room and Richard Dunwoody and Charlie Swan and Ruby Walsh were all getting changed.
It's a very unusual sport that you're not intimidated to the point where you can't perform though as well.
And you need the horse. That's one side of it. But there aren't many sports where, I mean, if you go to play tennis, you won't have Roger Federer in the changing room. If you go to play golf, you won't have
good point.
But as an amateur, you can walk into to whoever's riding on that day, and you get dressed beside them and you walk out alongside them. And Sam Willie Cohen often says it, you know, that this accessibility to the key players is something that doesn't happen in every sport, and it's magic.
What do you remember about the race though, like specifically?
I honestly remember from leaving the house to driving into Punchestown to handing out my saddle.
Did you know you were in with a shout all day?
He'd won the race the year before. Andy Bulger had the horse, and a horse called Handy Fellow, and he...
Why did he trust you to get on it as a matter of interest?
Didn't trust me, he'd more sense. I was involved in the buying of the horse to a gentleman called Liam Clancy up in Donegal. He was trained by Pauline Gavin down in Galway, and having been involved in the buying of the horse, I think they felt somewhat obliged to give me the ride. So he'd won on Easter Sunday in Dromoland, and he was going on to the Ladies' Cup, and it was the first time Ruby's Double was jumped, actually. So, it was nice to set that one off.
What price was it?
He's about 8 or 10 to 1. I had a chance. He had an each way chance, and he won last year. So, I mean, it wasn't beyond the bounds of possibility.
Did he win easy, or was it a close finish?
He won going away 3 or 4 lengths. Funny, Tony Martin was second in one of Ted Walsh's, and Enda was third. I can tell you what fell at the first. I know it all, shamelessly.
Well, that's good, though. I mean, so that helps now, because in your other jobs, I want to ask you about these. You're obviously a commentator. When did you become interested in commentating? Because it's a very...
I finished riding in 96 at Sligo Point to Point, and the following year I did the commentary at Sligo Point to Point in 97. Right. But all your friends were in racing. It was your circus to be a part of, and once I stopped, you thought, well, what am I going to do? I'm a spare part here now. So I did a little bit of writing for the Irish Field, and I started to commentate in 97. And
how long were you on the point to point circuit before you graduated?
Just 3 years. I was only 19 when I stopped.
Yeah.
So I was 20 when I did my first commentary. but love it. The live element to it is quite a buzz. I mean, if you have 15 or 20 or 25 horses lining up for a race and you have that live element to it, it's a real buzz, it's a real rush. And then trying to work them out as they go around, it's great.
Yeah, difficult though, supremely difficult. I mean, I remember, this is going to age me now, but Hale and Pace did a documentary about trying to commentate in a horse race. I don't know if you ever saw that. It was like, so this must be like the mid to late 90s they were doing it when they were popular. And they just put them straight in and said, off you go now. And they were like, obviously horrific, but then they worked on it for a couple of weeks and got to the point where they were still horrific, even though like two clever guys who were very talented broadcasters couldn't work out like that colours. They all look exactly the same. And then you do have an owner that has four different horses in the same race and the same colours, and it's the tiny little pinprick on the far side of the hats that you have to try and tell the difference from.
And also the pressure, like the people are backing on exchanges. Mm. And if you say called one that fell by mistake. Mm. And then it goes out to 1,000 to 1, and somebody's back. Now that more fuel them for doing it. But if you make a mistake, people will always pick up on the mistakes rather than the difficulty of trying to call an Irish Grand National or a 30 runner race in the flat. Like, I'm involved in broadcasting and racing, but I find it like I don't know how it's done. So like, surely there's a method in the madness, Richard. Like, how do you prepare to call a race, a big race?
Look, the most over-analysed thing in race commentating is the learning of the horses. To be honest with you, if you sat down at a wedding and you were introduced to nine people around the table, by the end of the day, you know the nine. You know,
I've got to tell you, Richard, I would not know the name of one of those people.
Not even in Douth or Douth.
Well, if I told you at the end that everyone was going to keep quiet and you were going to have to stand up and list their names, you put a bit of a focus on it and you say, right, I better learn that that's Mary and John.
I have a paranoia about names. I really have, like, so I, this is...
You're not helping my...
But I get, okay, so...
That's not the difficult bit. You've all day today to look at tomorrow. There's going to be these 10 horses in the first race, wherever I am commentating. And look, we've all crammed for exams or whatever you needed to do. You'll get the 10 names into your head. The real thing to commentary, if you like, it's the describing of the race. It's saying what's relevant to the punter. It's spotting which horse is going well. You know, is a rider sitting holding on to nothing, or is he sitting waiting to pounce? Did you see something? And now, look, I'm fortunate enough to be doing the 25 best days of the year in RTE, and that means that you're calling the very best racing.
Like Ruby Walsh finishing.
Exactly. Now, of course, well, that was an unusual one. I mean, you hope that your commentary could match the occasion. You know, we've so many great commentaries and they fit the occasion. And that's what you're trying to achieve. Ruby finishing was a funny one because he went by the line. Nobody had a clue that he was retiring.
No.
And he goes by the line and I say, and Kenboy wins. And he does this, not this. And every rider just, you know, they give it that. And I just said, and Ruby Walsh waves. Now, I couldn't say, because he might be retiring, because who knows, but you just acknowledge, and Ruby Walsh waved, there's something different here. Now you look back and say, well, he waved because it was goodbye.
Right,
but you have to capture whatever happens in the moment.
But you've also got to back yourself in terms of knowing whether or not they've got nothing underneath them, because, again, you can get that wrong. Somebody can be, could be a bit of rope-a-dope going on. There could just be, like I know you're saying, after all my experience, I know what the truth is, but still, in the big races, that's... How a horse is going is very important.
Yeah. Oh, it is, and that's what you're looking for. I mean, to me, the best race in the year to call by a country mile is the Irish Grand National.
Well, do you have to remember the colours then? So, say Michael Leary's got 7 entries, JP McManus. Are you then remembering the colours of the hats?
The hats, 100% the hats. I mean, the colours themselves. And to be fair, the Grand National is the most overstated race for learning horses, because we all know the high-class chasers. They've been there for 4 or 5 years. Many of them might have begun point-appointing. So you know them so well.
Yeah.
So that's not the hard bit. The cap's easy. You've got to know that, you know, Val Solido was wearing the pink and General Principle was in the orange and Woodswell was in the red or whatever they were in. And you remember those and they're set in your brain. But once you remember them, and you know the rider's styles as well, you'd know where you'd expect a horse to be. Is he supposed to be handy? Once you get them over the first two and you go, right, he's near the front, he's near the middle, he's near the back. You have a good sense. It's that initial, down to the first fence, there's 13 Jigginstown caps. Now, which is which? So if a horse goes down and you miss the colour of the cap, you are in trouble. But that, because there's so much happening in that race, most races you're deciding what will I say. In the National, you're deciding which thing will I say. I've seen 4 horses make a mistake. Which one is the most relevant?
Do you use binoculars or do you use the monitor?
Yes and yes. I try to use the binoculars as much as I can. But the monitor can make... It can make a fool of you because...
It's tiny, right? All monitors...
No, the monitors are good.
Okay,
we're
right.
Very good, sir. The Irish Racing Integrity Service provide commentators an excellent service with high-definition pictures and all that. But you can... The way you can get caught is if I'm on the binoculars and the monitor's looking at something else. So if I go 1, 2, 3, 4 on the monitor and the cameraman goes back to the front horse and I go, I was about to tell you what was 5th, but he's moved now.
Yeah.
So I'm in control of my own destiny, if you like, on the binoculars.
I find it very hard to look through binoculars. Are there special types of binoculars for like commentary?
I bought a pair in 98, I think it was, and they've served me well.
It's like a golfing putter or something like that.
It is, yeah, yeah. Look, you get the best you can. You want to put everything in your favour.
When you were a kid, were you commentating in the back, dreaming of being the jockey or dreaming of being the commentator?
I never dreamt of being a jockey, and I wasn't a jockey. I was someone who rode for a little while and enjoyed it from hunting. I just always wanted to be involved in racing, right, and any way I felt I could. And I suppose the good thing about racing is it's offered me so many opportunities. I mean, to ride initially as an amateur who was in school and through just early stages of college and got the opportunities to ride against some great riders the odd time. And then from there, I couldn't ride anymore. But I've managed to, you know, do the commentaries and set up my own business within it. The number of opportunities it's afforded me is quite incredible. It's an extraordinary game and mixed with so many like-minded people that are passionate about it. And I wouldn't be doing anything else.
Can I ask about your other job, which is Director of Horses and Training at Tattersalls?
Yeah, that's the, I suppose, the neat connection there, if you like, is that many of the horses who win Point of Points then go on to sales, of which there are six. Tattersalls runs six sales at Cheltenham throughout the year. We begin at the November meeting at Cheltenham after racing on the Friday. Then December, we have a sale in February, the Thursday night after the Cheltenham Festival, and April and May. And look, so many, outside of Point of Pointers, so many top class horses have come through there. Envoy Allen has won, he won his Point of Point, he went to the sales, he made 400,000.
Right.
But everyone felt this could be the next coming. He looks like he's the real deal, and so far so good.
Have you been commentating on Envoy Allen at the Point to Point and then...
Often. Not him specifically, but I've often commentated, and that's the advantage. I'm going point to point on a Sunday. You see these horses, you try and, you know, persuade them it's a good idea to come to sales. Thankfully now the guys know that the sales, they've been well rewarded there. It brings the market to see their horse at Cheltenham. And you know, the English market has a real trust in what we have now. They know that the Envoy Lens will cast money, but we've plenty of examples of 20, 30, 40,000 pound horses doing extremely well as well. So the English market knows what to expect from it. And I'd say one of the things about sales that gives me the most buzz is there's an element of, you know, in racing, it's all about the big people and they're dominating all the rest of it. But the small guy is getting a real opportunity through the sales. And I mean, one story, there's a guy in the West called Joe Ryan, and he was putting his kid through trying to become a pilot. And every time he sold a horse, he put a few quid aside so his son Josh could be a pilot. And then he landed on a horse, you won't believe this, but it's true, called Turn and Go. So Turn and Go, John Thomas McNamara, the late John Thomas, rode him and he won and said, this is a very good horse. Brought him to Cheltenham. And who bought him? Turn and Go, only Michael O'Leary. Well, Eddie O'Leary bought him for Michael O'Leary. Turned out to be a good horse. He got hurt afterwards. But that gave Joe enough money to push Josh through pilot school. And he is now a pilot for Ryanair. Now, I can give you 10 of those stories. But it really is the side
That's
of it that
class.
Maybe gets lost. That people have life-changing moments in that sales ring. And it's great to see.
Yeah, because we've had small pinhookers and small operations on the show over the period of time, and like, obviously, look, everybody knows the hyper corporations that are at the top end of it, and like, obviously that industry is there, you are required to have that in any industry, but it is the small people who keep this going, who go to the point to points, who volunteer, who pinhook part time. And I can see why that would be a very appealing thing to be involved in.
Absolutely. And look, the big guys still get big, but I remember the first Cheltenham Festival sale that I was at, Barry O'Neill and his now wife Bridget had a share in the horse that topped the sale. And as soon as the hammer came down, I said, God, well done. And she turned around and she said, we can start the house now. And then a couple of years later on social media, you see the tweets saying, moving into our new house, and you go, yeah, that's what got that ball rolling for them. They'll never forget that.
Yeah.
But the number of instances, so when you read the headlines of the sales saying Point to Pointer made 200,000, there's a very human story behind that where somebody's life could have been changed in that moment. And it's great to see.
Yeah,
it's great to see it live in action in front of you.
And it starts in a field somewhere that
exactly.
is completely off the beaten track that has been set up by a team of volunteers. So it's it is definitely Irish country living at its very best. And I've been to one. I was at one. You said I was in one in Donegal. It's obviously an unlicensed one or a secret one.
We don't have secret unlicensed Point to Points, Ger.
the
underground, very much above board.
The underground Point to Point. I'm still trying to find the name of it, but I haven't got an answer from my my in-laws to tell me where we were that day. It was somewhere near Donegal town.
Yeah, no, you weren't.
You're saying no?
But you should come. Yeah. So we're all going to Dowth. Will I pick you up? What time will I pick you up?
Yeah, just make sure there's good hip flasks and stuff.
Well, you don't need a hip flask.
You don't need. It's all there.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could win the voucher. How many years is it going?
He's not allowed. To say it, you can tell everybody. Yeah, why not?
I know you won at Punchtown as a dream come true as a jockey. What's the best race you've seen as in the game?
Oh, Cheltenham Gold Cup, Native River might bite. That was incredible.
Native River came from the point to point ranks.
He did. But even Bruff Scott said, he said, of all the great battles I've seen, Now, the best race I've called and the best horse to ever call was Hurricane Fly. He was just, from a commentator's point of view, he was a dream, because he might win, he might look like he was going to be beat, but he always delivered. So you could nearly put your house in him when you were building it up. But the year our Connor came at him in the Champion Hurdle, and you thought, this is it. Look, Hurricane Fly's been a great stalwart, but our Connor's a bit better. And our Connor headed him over the last, and he came back at him. And the Leopardstown's a great track to commentate at. You have a great sight vision of them, and the horses have a good chance of coming back at the leader. And he was the best to call. But I thought Native River might bite in the Gold Cup. It was just a great race, start to finish.
Right, this is Friday Night Racing and Off the Ball, brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie or follow the new Twitter account at HRI Racing. Also check out the hashtag Every Racing Moment. We're going to take a quick break now and get some tips for your weekend. We've had a bit of a dry run recently, so hopefully that's going to correct itself with the absence of Johnny Ward. First, though, I want you to keep an eye out for a mini-documentary that we've shot with the jockey Conor Hoban. It's going to be on all of our social channels at 6:30 this Sunday. It's a beautifully shot piece of work with Conor at his busy pre-training and breaking yard. In it, he explains what's involved in teaching young racehorses the basic skills as they move into their racing careers. Here's a little clip from the video. Have a look.
You have a closer bond with the horses, and suppose when you're at the track and the two-year-olds are running, and whoever may be riding them, the first question, was it a good ride? Because we're after breaking it. So I suppose once they say it's a good ride, and that's our job really done. But it's great to see them progress, and obviously you want to see them doing well, and you do get a great kick out of seeing them winning.
And you're very welcome back to Friday Night Racing here on Off the Ball. We're live across all of our social channels every Friday afternoon at around about 3 o'clock, and we're live on the radio and News Talk every Friday evening at 8 o'clock. If you want to get in touch with us, you can always just tweet us at Off the Ball. Now, the Tote Irish Injured Jockeys Fund remains at €7,549. After a magical finish just out of the frame in the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe last weekend. It's busy on the Irish front this weekend with racing from Fairy House, Limerick and the Curragh. There's going to be a 50 grand guarantee in the trifecta pool for the Tote-sponsored Irish Cesarewitch at the Curragh on Sunday. What better time to try a try on thetote.com? And Tote customers can enjoy free racecourse tickets to selected meetings throughout the year. See thetote.com for more details. Did you give us some horses to put in John's notebook for...
No.
Was it Lingstown or something? You said the horse won it? Or?
Look, he's no secret at this stage. The horse called Shishkin won at Lingstown. Yeah, but he's gone on since and won his bumper for Nicky Henderson, so he's not a huge...
Well, still, I haven't heard that. Envoy Allen, the way you're speaking about him, almost he could go to the top. There are huge
very,
hopes.
Very hopeful. I mean, he doesn't look like a two-miler, but yet he's done everything over 2 mile. The only worry you have is Champagne Fever was a two-miler, and when they went to try and stretch the distance, they realised, well, he definitely was a two-miler. So, but if Envoy Allen stays, he's an incredible talent.
What if you are a two-mile horse running around a field that's 3 miles and 16
fences?
That's
a good point. It doesn't matter. We've had so many two-milers. Like Faheen won a Champion Hurdle, Special Tiara won a Champion Chase. Our tracks are actually, if you want to fault them, they're a little bit tight. And our riders are very good. And their ability, particularly Derek probably cracked this more than anyone at the outset, and it gave him the edge, his ability to put a horse to sleep, and therefore a class horse, a horse that has that 2 mile speed, if he can switch them off, and this is why point of pointing works, it's about teaching a horse to relax and jump in a race, and then switch them on and make them race.
Okay.
And he does that better than anybody else. So you can let a 2 miler almost feel like he's going down to the start. It's so effortless for him. And if he can use that burst at the right time, we've had one man running a point to point. You know, he wouldn't have stayed 2 mile, one in a horse box on the track. So you can, and I often laugh, I hear trainers, you know, they win a 2 mile bumper with the next pointer and say, oh, I know he stays 3 mile, he stayed in an Irish point to point. I thought, whoo, you'll learn. I'd look at the pedigree before I'd look at the 3 mile point to point, to be honest.
Okay, so you just track them around basically, and then you turn them back into a 2 miler for the last.
You can, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
That's a good point, pedigree, yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. Oh, it's huge, it's everything.
What are we looking at this weekend, John?
The Munster National, as Muhammad Ali said, after the rumble in the jungle, folks, pay attention. 4:35 Limerick on Sunday, in memory of the great Limerick man, the late JT McNamara. So, of course, JB McManus will want to win it for JT. He's got a few runners in the race, including Spiderweb, who won it last year. He'll be in the reckoning. It's soft to heavy ground. There's a rank outsider that's not without a chance called Little Shane. But the one I'm going for, internal transfer, not too many miles on the clock, one over the course, one on soft, fourth in the Kerry National last time out after a break. Robbie Power in the plate and the saddle, solid each way, 6-1. Eric McNamara, local trainer, internal transfer. Do you agree, Richard, or do you disagree?
I always agree. Simple as that. I haven't seen the decks. I'm right in behind you.
Do you punt? Or you're not allowed to punt? Do you feel you shouldn't
punt?
No,
I'm allowed to punt. I don't. Well, when I say I don't, if I see value that I think... I've never gone to the races to have a bet, ever.
Yeah.
But if you, by commentating, you see the race maybe with a little bit more depth, and from time to time you go, God, I didn't expect him to be 12 or 14 to 1, and you'll have that bet. I flipping missed one yesterday. There's a horse called Mossy Fenn. The Doyles had him, and he won in Lochbrickland, I think. And he looked very good, and he went off at 4 or 5 to 1 yesterday. And I went on the night before to say, I'll just see what price he is. And he's 4 or 5 to 1. I said, I will back him tomorrow now because he looks like value. And then I checked the result, as you do, and went, yeah.
Robbed home. Yeah.
Yeah, but there you go.
Can you have a bit on at the point to points if you want?
You can have a bet, yeah. I mean, they're strong. The Northern bookies were always known for taking a good bet. You get probably stronger crowds in Cork, but it has got weaker. There's no two ways about it. Without the crowds and the depth of bookmakers, it's got more difficult. But yeah, you can absolutely come and have a bet, and we'll be encouraged to do so.
Have you looked at the Cesarewitch this weekend? Am I putting you on the spot to ask?
Haven't seen.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, no, I was en route in here.
That's fair enough. John, have you looked at anything else this weekend?
No, I was trying to get the one bullish in the chamber. I think the bullet might be internal transfer. Yeah, that's what I would probably go with.
All right. Richard, what's the rest of this year looking like for you? Because obviously you're just getting back into the point to point now.
Yeah, season starts as of last weekend, so you're pretty much every weekend now till June. Intermittently stepping in to do the... With Down Royal comes up now in a couple of weeks' time. That looks like a hell of a meeting. We could have Clandazobo coming over for the new Ladbrokes Champion Chase. Delta Work could be in there as well. Envoy LN could have his first run over hurdles. Sam Crow could have his first run over fences. I love Down Royal. I do the commentary up there. I've always loved Down Royal. I love the North. Married to a Northern woman, obviously. But the Northern racing I enjoy, but that looks like a hell of a meeting. And then from there, I'll be point appointing onto sales at Cheltenham and racing at the key days right the way through. So it's great.
You're involved in sales. Are you worried about Brexit?
Everybody's worried about Brexit, yeah. You'd have to be. I mean, until
what are the big worries, just from a very basic level, for people who like are racing fans or whatever, what are the worries regarding Brexit and Irish racing?
Look, the worries, I mean, to simplify it, and you don't need to complicate it, the worries are anything that restricts the animal moving and any cost attached to that. And the trade between England and Ireland is huge. It's a huge part of our industry, but it's equally a huge part of their industry, and it's a huge part of their supply chain. They need to fix this almost as much as we do, I'd suggest, because they need the horses to they don't breed enough horses, so they certainly need a huge quantity of horses for us flat and over jumps. So once the movement can remain as it is, or something close to it, and once the tariffs aren't in any way prohibitive, but they're two easy things to say, but. Phew. Yeah, we've got to make sure we stay on top of it.
Yeah, you'd hope that the rumbles of a breakthrough in the last 24 hours might be trending in the right direction.
Hopefully so.
A border in the sea would actually maybe mean free movement for horses. I don't know if they can make dispensation. I don't know what if the detail of that type of stuff has been worked out just yet, but you can imagine it'll have to be hammered out over a weekend.
It'll have to be, and you hope there isn't a delay. I mean, we currently have a tripartite agreement between France, England and Ireland where horses can move freely, and the health restrictions between all three respect each other, if you like.
Yeah.
That doesn't remain in a no-deal scenario. So you're hoping that something that allows that Europe would respect the rules of the UK, if you like, or the levels of the UK as a third country. But that will need to be thrashed out. And the problem is, of course, there's so much needs to be thrashed out by so few people. But
yeah.
Look, it's a threat. We are absolutely aware of that.
Yeah, look, absolutely. Richard, it's been fascinating having you. And thanks a million for joining us today.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you, John.
That is this week's Friday Night Racing, brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie or follow the new Twitter account at @HRIRacing. Hashtag every racing moment is what you should be checking out if you are going racing this weekend. Have a great time. We'll see you next week. Good luck.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.